Comforting the afflicted, afflicting the comfortable, bringing faith to the doubtful, doubt to the faithful, friend of the friendless, odor to the odorless, calling lame radio to rise and talk, coast to coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. You will need three things for tonight's guest, Tracy Twyman. It'll be good to have Tracy back on again. You will need a dollar bill. You will need a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil. Doesn't have to be number two. And you'll need to have that ready for about an hour from now. What if money were magic? What if money, what if our money in the United States were a form of magic? Our currency was a form of magic. It seems like a bizarre concept, of course, because we think, well, money represents cash that the government has in the bank, and so we're just trading on things that somewhere, somehow, there is something to back up with. I got my prepositions right. No, actually, not according to Tracy Twyman. She knows a little bit about magic. She knows a little bit about the occult. We've talked to her over the years on Coast to Coast AM. And in the new book, Solomon's Treasure, The Magic and Mystery of America's Money, she makes a claim I've never heard before. Now, I've heard some things in her book, some of the things that she pulls into this discussion, but I've never heard anybody make the central claim that she does about the occult, our founding fathers, and money. And I don't think, whether you agree with her or not next hour, that you will ever forget the conversation tonight. You will never look at the money in your hand when you pay for something in the same way again. Hang on. It's so worth it. Tracy Twyman's Solomon's Treasure, The Magic and Mystery of America's Money, next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Email, lots of it, some very interesting stories to report, and a first hour guest that goes back to last Saturday's conversation on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. A little crypto news to get the show started on Coast to Coast AM. Many of these stories can be found at coasttocoastam.com. Researchers have sequenced the bird flu viruses that have killed two people in Turkey in early January. So I guess by that they have found, like, which one came first, you know, who came, which one of the viruses hit first and which one of the people were affected first. And they say that one of them contains a worrying mutation, one of these sequences. And this is the genetic tweak that they've been fearing for H5N1, that this virus has become more adapted to humans than to birds, and more adapted to the nose and throat than to the lungs. And it's this latter effect that could help to increase the chances of bird flu being transmitted between people, researchers say. They add that many more mutations would probably be necessary before the virus is capable of sparking a full-blown pandemic in which the disease spreads like, as they always say, wildfire from person to person. And that's just one overused expression, isn't it, even by scientists? But either way you look at it, it looks like the bird flu, if you pardon the expression, has sprouted wings. A map due to be unveiled in Beijing and London this coming week may lend weight to a theory that a Chinese admiral discovered America before Christopher Columbus. The map, which shows North and South America, apparently states that it is a 1763 copy of another map made in 1418. The map was bought for about $500 from a Shanghai dealer in 2001 by a Chinese lawyer and collector. According to the book, 1421, the year China discovered the world, a Chinese admiral and eunuch, Zheng He, sailed around the world and discovered America on the way. The map is now being tested to check the age of its paper and its ink. So we will know in due course whether 70 years before Christopher Columbus claimed the New World for Spain, that this ancient Chinese mariner and eunuch landed on the coast of California and said, I claim this New World for China. Satellites have monitored crop conditions around the world for decades, helping traders predict future prices, right? In commodities markets and governments anticipating crop shortages, that sort of thing. But these satellite images are now increasingly turning up in courtrooms across the nation as the Agricultural Department's Risk Management Agency cracks down on farmers involved in crop insurance fraud. The Agricultural Department's Farm Service Agency, which helps farmers get loans and payments from a number of its programs, also uses satellite imaging to monitor compliance, which means across government and private industry alike, satellite imaging technology is being used in water rights litigation and in prosecution of environmental cases, ranging from hog confinement facilities violations of waste discharge regulations to injury damage lawsuits stemming from herbicide applications. And the technology is also being used to monitor the forestry and mining industries. But a lot of farmers would be shocked, said an agricultural economist at Kansas State University. A lot of farmers would be shocked at the detail you can tell. What it does is keep honest folks honest. The satellite imaging. Very interesting. So farmers, remember, the cornfield has ears. And you don't need a satellite to tell you how dry it's been in the Southwest. It would have been nice if the media had been talking more about it. Much of Arizona is entering an 11th year of drought conditions. The state could experience the driest winter season in centuries. It could all change, of course, and you know, a little bit of snow and some rain could go a long way on this, but this has officials really worried. More threat of wildfires. Arizona's mountains are virtually bare. Snowpack conditions worse than they were at the same time in 2002. And that was a year that set records as the driest in five centuries. So as dry in 2002 as it was when that Chinese mariner got there and said, man, it's dry. But this is the interesting part for me is that they can't turn off the water, of course, in Seattle. I mean, they're getting all of the rain up there that they need in the Southwest. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but I guess this is true. Phoenix hasn't gotten any rain since October 18th. That just sounds, you know, astounding. And maybe that's the truth. I just hadn't heard. The reason why we haven't heard about it, of course, is that it didn't happen in New York City. Because whenever any kind of rain, you know, that comes too much or too little, you know, they always talk about it on the Today Show and Good Morning America. No rain since October 18th in Phoenix. I barely heard a word about it. I hope that's not the case. That must be hard. New evidence that there's a mysterious cloud of hydrogen in the Virgo cluster, 50 million light years from Earth. And there's new evidence that this mysterious cloud of hydrogen is a dark galaxy emitting no starlight. You can find out more about this at fizorg.com. I love that website for science news. No starlight, presented today at the American Astronomical Society meeting in Washington by an international team led by astronomers from the National Science Foundation. How cool is that? Also, on the subject of light, same website, fizorg.com. With the exception of lasers and free electron lasers, there hasn't been another fundamental way to produce what physicists call coherent light for close to 50 years. You know, you think about, we'll just think about a laser and you get a better idea of what coherent light means. However, a group of researchers from Lawrence Livermore and MIT have found a new source of coherent optical radiation that is distinct from lasers and free electron lasers. And you can find out more at physorg.com. Now, I don't know if it's indicative of anything in your life, but I do think it's been fascinating to follow this story of a 9-year-old boy in California who suffered from uncontrollable head jerking movements after hours of video game playing. And they stopped the twitching after his doctor banned the boy from playing his PlayStation, according to the report. It really makes you wonder about some of the other things that might be affecting kids today from all of these video games and all of these activities in front of screens. Nicholas Lavin said that he played PlayStation constantly over the holidays at his home in San Diego and began to notice his head would jerk back and forth. They took away the PlayStation. That stopped. But I think the research on some of these things and maybe some effects on epilepsy and other things are just beginning. And, of course, you heard award-winning actress Shelley Winters has died at age 85. I was waiting. Immediately, Pat Robertson issued a statement saying, God smote Shelley Winters for starring in the 1969 gangster movie Bloody Mama. Thing is, I'm not so sure he's wrong on that one. God was just busy. Couldn't get around to it for a while. So many people wrote last week about a variety of topics that we had on the air, Peter Lance being one of them. And some of you have exchanged emails with Peter. I've also enjoyed a lot of conversation about some of the things that started in an email segment last week, and we're going to pursue one of those coming up later on this hour. And, of course, many more of you have written about Ramona Bell. And this is just typical of what many people have written. Joe said, I'm so bummed out over the untimely passing of Ramona. Never met her, but felt as though I knew her. Poor Art. Let him know we also miss her. Thank you, Joe. Well, as I remind Joe and everybody else, you can go to the website at coasttocoastam.com and you can get an address there to send a card or a letter. And no, there is no formal place for you to, you know, send something if you wanted to make a donation in her honor. But you could donate to anything, and I'm sure the family would appreciate it. The Cat Charities, Humane Society, asthma, just remember to do it. Just don't think about how nice it would be to do. Just do it before you talk yourself out of it. I think it's very sweet. And for that matter, too, you know, for years, when somebody would pass in my life, I haven't had to do this for a while, but I'll think about it again. I would just name something in my office in their honor. And I had like the Bob Collins Memorial pen holder. And I would just type up a little label and I would put it on there just so that I would always think of my friend Bob Collins. Or, you know, when my friend Joe passed, I named some scissors in his honor and put a little label on it and kept it on my desk just enough to keep thinking about him. Last night, Peter Lance said TWA 800 investigation was shut down on November 17th, 1997. This last week. And yes, now how about this for a weird coincidence? The show that Coast to Coast played afterward was a repeat from the show that originally aired on November 17th, 1997. That was a weird coincidence. Others, too, people were talking about. I mentioned in the movie Enemy of the State, which was made before 9/11, that one of the main characters in that had a birthday, which was 9/11, and he was, in the movie, the enemy of the state. And they very specifically said his birthday. That was creepy. And many of you, Michael and David, wrote about the scene in The Big Lebowski. And on the TV is the first President Bush giving a speech about Saddam. When the camera zooms in on the check being written by, I think it's Jeff Bridges, with the date 9/11, the president says, "This aggression will not stand." Right there, as you see 9/11 being written on the check. I don't know. There's a lot more of those, too. This email is in regard to the story about the rust-colored powder that had coated cars in Chicago. I live in Topeka, Kansas, and had what sounds like the exact same strange rust powder covering two of my outside cars one morning last week. That, according to Scott, he suggests the best solution he can come up with is that would be a meteor skimmed through the atmosphere and oxidized some of the iron that was in it, and the result was rust rain. Don't know, and we'll, I think, still awaiting details from Chicago. Ian, great shows, writes James. Thank you. I have to respond to the well-meaning gentleman who called last week living in Canada regarding hungry children. Sadly, it is true. However, funds are available and provided by our government in the form of food stamps so that no one will go hungry. Well, at least, James, no one will starve to death. I think some people still go hungry. But in fact, the problem is getting people in need to sign up. Since the mechanism is already established, maybe the focus should be on helping non-government organizations in conjunction with the government to raise awareness that help is there for people who need it. Well, it's good to point out, but there's also a lot of people who kind of hover in between the working poor who don't qualify for the same amounts of help, and they kind of have to depend more on what's available in the community. So again, support your local food bank. Dear Ian, my husband thought you'd be interested in the following that I noticed. This comes from Tracy. While doing our usual shopping in Vancouver a couple of days ago, I started noticing cashiers in all different kinds of stores wearing surgical gloves. I also like to shop at these Chinese dollar stores and have noticed them as well wearing these gloves, these surgical gloves. There's something going on here in British Columbia that mainstream media's not saying, since I've been noticing people that never wore gloves before are now wearing them. Please let me know if you hear anything more about this. I've read every local paper I can get my hands on. I hope wearing gloves, Tracy, and have heard nothing. You can bet that my husband and I will now be wearing surgical gloves as well when we do our shopping, although she doesn't know why. Though I'd like to share this with you, perhaps you might want to report this to the audience. Indeed, well, if anybody has any other idea, let me know, and I'll report on that for next week. I have a biological specimen, writes Steve of California, of a small claw that I removed from the top of my left foot. The claw seemed to be attached to something that had a mind of its own, not wanting to part with a portion of its structure, like some type of strange blood vein sailing worm. The bottom line is the very real possibility that these unknown types of creatures living within human beings have some level of higher intelligence above other creatures more commonly known about. Well, always possible, I guess. If you've seen a couple of the other stories at coasttocoastam.com, you'll know that there are all sorts of new creatures being reported all the time. Two cryptozoological stories right now at coasttocoastam.com, including the story of that weird fish that they found that looks like a kind of like half piranha, half eel. And no one's ever seen it before, other than in high school cafeterias, which I'm pretty sure have been serving that for years. Hi, Ian. I'm a dedicated Coast to Coast fan and a St. Louis expat in Japan. Whenever I'm out of my house, I carry Coast to Coast in a flash memory device, including while kayaking across the lake Biwa, where I live, or when I climbed Fuji in the dark and with oxygen deprivation. I'm a journalism school grad and a PhD in linguistics. So if you ever need some reports from Japan, I'm your man, says Dr. Frank, an associate professor of Ryukoku University. And yes, he says, I've seen chemtrails in Japan. Listening to Coast while climbing Fuji in the dark. How cool is that? If you ever get a mind to in the email, send the creepiest places you've ever listened to Coast to Coast. Thank you so much, David, for sending me a forecast of my luckiest days. He's an amateur astrologist. And Eve wrote this. I was listening to your show Sunday. I heard you talk about someone's loved one leaving a voicemail with her name. I recently lost my mom, and I heard my mom, like she was there right next to me, say my name very clearly. It is so comforting to know that she is watching over me. Well, the woman who emailed in that story about her daughter calling her voicemail months after her daughter's death and just saying her name over the on the voicemail is coming up next. We'll talk to her more about that and her book, Ghostly Antiques, on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, this is just getting better and better. Not only do we have Tracy Twyman coming up after the top of the hour, and I just so admire her work, her attention to detail, and yet also her inquisitiveness and her ability to think outside the box. It'll make for a great conversation about the magic of money and how it's not just a matter of that money acts like magic, our paper money, but that actually she believes the founding fathers intended it that way. And that, as in many cases, Freemasons and occultists, many of our founding fathers founded our economic system on this very principle of money as magic. And she says the symbols on our money will back up that claim. The further we got away from the gold standard, the more magical symbols began to appear on the dollar bill. So that means coming up after the top of the hour, you're going to want at some point a piece of paper, something to write with, and a buck or two around to talk about coming up with Tracy Twyman. But that's not all. Because you ordered before midnight tonight, we are including in this show the woman who emailed in a little while ago and with whom I was exchanging emails about a voicemail she got from her daughter months after her daughter had died. And I have just been notified that indeed we have Jonathan Sharkey. He's the guy who's running for governor in the great state of Minnesota, the land of 10,000 rinks, the home of pond hockey. And he is going to be running for governor as a vampire on the vampire witches and pagan party ticket, I believe. We'll ask him about that. His press conference earlier this week, which made international news, and what happened to his significant other at her job as a result. Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. I don't know a lot about ghostly antiques other than what I have heard before on Coast to Coast AM. I don't know whether Jennifer Robbins wants to start there. I think I'd like to. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you after our conversation from back in, what was it, November?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Since we emailed back and forth about that story, which we'll get back to. But tell me about Ghostly Antiques 1 and 2.
Okay, Ghostly Antiques is a novel about psychometry. And, of course, psychometry is a psychic power that some possess whereby they can hold objects or touch objects and divine from them, even get visions from them. I did a little studying on this and was so fascinated by it. In fact, I met a woman that was able to do this, and it convinced me that it really is a true gift. So I wrote about it in a novel, and I enjoyed writing it so much. And after that, I did the sequel.
And so you've spoken with people who can just touch an object and know some of its history, or do they use that object as a way to talk with previous owners of that item?
Yes, they can do both. It's amazing about antiques. Often antiques hold the spirit of the original owner, who is long time deceased. And this has been another thing that I looked into and found that this is an actual fact.
When you say actual fact, meaning you can verify this scientifically somehow?
Well, there's been studies done about it.
Okay.
And whether it's proven for a fact or not, it's that. To me, it is a fact.
Some
studies in universities even have been conducted on that.
Can you give us the best example that you have personally encountered of somebody who had a ghostly antique?
There was a woman that I worked with who, when I was selling real estate some years ago, she had a home in a suburb close by where I live. That was for sale, and they were selling everything in the house. There were antiques in there. She did take an antique that she liked real well. She purchased it and brought it home. Well, along came with it a ghost. And she had to have a person come into the house to identify this.
And they were able to identify that it the ghost came in with the antique,
That's
not
right.
with the house. Okay.
Exactly, yes.
And so was she able to keep the antique and rid herself of the ghost, or did she keep the ghost too?
No, she got rid of the antique.
Oh, did she really?
Yeah.
You can't exorcise the antique of the ghost?
Yes, you can. And in the book, Ghostly Antiques, my character, Clara Espy, does just that.
Okay.
With many of the items in the antique shop that she is forced to purchase to make a living with.
And if you want to...
Her husband is passed away.
If you want to find out more about these novels, you can go to, is it JenniferRobbins.com with one B on
yes.
Robbins? Okay.
JenniferRobbins.com. And I just had a new release, too.
Ghostly Antiques 3? What Ghostly Antiques 3 is what I
said. No, it's another one. It's What Happened to Anna. And I dedicated that book to my daughter, who we're going to talk about, who
right.
is now deceased. Only because I wrote that long before I wrote Ghostly Antiques, but never did anything with it. And she encouraged me to do so, so I had it published now.
Well, tell us... Well, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It was her favorite, so...
Tell me about your daughter while she was living. Tell us about her.
Okay, Kathleen was my third child, and a wonderful girl. She has had four children, and grown now. And we were very, very close. In fact, there were so many times that we had, like, psychic things happen. One time on her way home from work, when she worked at a restaurant in our downtown area, late at night she was coming home in the winter where it was icy and slippery on the highway. She almost got hit by a car coming the other way. I actually dreamt the whole thing and woke up from the dream.
Mm.
And the following day was a Sunday, and I talked to her later in that afternoon, and she was starting to tell me all about this car coming at her and how she was almost hit and had to swerve off the road and all that. And I said, oh, my gosh, Kathy, I dreamt that whole thing. It woke me up. Mm. And we compared the times, and it was exactly the same time.
Well, how did we lose her then?
She died of cancer of the lungs. When she became real ill, she was taken into the hospital, and they were trying all sorts of things, you know, doing many procedures on her. And I have to back up a little bit about this cell phone of mine. I bought a cell phone for emergency purposes only, and never signing a contract. I just used the phone cards.
Right.
Okay,
but,
so I never programmed it for voicemail, and while the family and I were waiting in the waiting room, my oldest son asked me about it, and he decided to program my cell phone for voicemail.
Probably kind of bored and gave him something to do in the waiting
yeah,
room.
Yeah, right. So he did, and I hadn't given my cell phone number out to the family because I really didn't use it like most people use cell phones. It was for emergencies only. I carried it in my purse.
Right.
So anyway, I never had a voicemail or anything on it after that. Kathy died 2 weeks later. And some months, that was in April. So in September, I had gone shopping for a desk for my new office that I had been remodeling. And in the store there, they had some folders that one of my other daughters was looking for. Her little girl going back to school needed some orange folders. So I reached in my purse and pulled out my cell phone to call her to see if she wanted me to pick some up for her. Well, when I turned my cell phone on, it said I had a voicemail. So I punched in my code and listened, and it was her. And she said her name, Kathy. And that was all there was.
And you could tell, you knew that was her voice.
Oh, definitely.
Like a mother would.
Her voice was so distinctive, you couldn't mistake it for anybody else.
Did it sound like Kathy when she was healthy?
Yes. She sounded great. I hung up the phone and quickly called my daughter that I was going to call and told her, I says, you know, I think this was Kathy on my cell phone, and it was on my voicemail. I was all excited, you know, and trying to tell her and everything.
Right.
And so she said, well, don't do anything with it, Ma, you know, just keep it there. We'll check it later. So we did. We checked it later, and several members of the family listened to it and all verified that it was Kathy.
Well, I had mentioned this last week, and as you heard, perhaps I had an email from somebody else who had a similar experience, and I have no doubt that we'll hear from other people who may have something like that to report. So,
you know, it's not that uncommon, and I wasn't really frightened then. But I was excited. I had not ever expected anything like that. I've read about it and, you know, heard about it. I've heard other people talk about it. Never really expected it at all. It was a complete surprise, but a nice surprise, because there is life after death. And our loved ones are around.
Well, and it's nice when we can hear from them either in our dreams or in our voicemail. And thank you so much for sharing that story. If you want to find out more about Jennifer Robbins, again, it's jenniferrobbins.com, 1B. And thank you for giving us the time and for bringing this conversation with us finally onto the air. So thank you.
Thank you, Ian.
Jonathan Sharkey is also with us. You may have heard his story in the news these days. He's getting a lot of pub for his campaign to become the next governor for the great state of Minnesota as a vampire. And I'm not sure, have you done any research on this, Jonathan? Are you the first official vampire to run for office anywhere?
Yes, sir. It seems I am.
Okay. Jonathan Sharkey doesn't live too far away from me, actually. And you've been in the local news here, too, about something else, which we'll get to in just a minute. But you're part of the Vampires, Witches, and Pagan Party? Is that right?
The VWP Party. I founded the VWP Party back in September.
And
the reason why I formed the party was to unite unity among the vampires, witches, pagans, Wiccans, Satanists, and other kins of the communities, especially those of non-Christian beliefs.
Okay. And as was there a primary for this? Did you all get together and have a convention, or just as the founding member of the party, you're just going to run was there a vocal acclamation from the other witches and pagans that you'd a man, or how did that come about?
I put it out to people that were on or are actually on the executive committee, and they thought it would be great for me to do this, especially since I am planning on running for the presidency in 2008.
So this would be a way to establish yourself as a candidate for president, too, like a lot of politicians do. They run for something local before they go for the big office.
Correct, but that wasn't my original decision. Originally, I was just going to run for the presidency because I feel this country is in dire need of a total overhaul, if not an enema. And while I was walking around in Minnesota talking with people, explaining my presidential campaign, people started to say, well, why don't you run for governor? We can't handle Pawlenty. He's just, you know, he's just as bad as Ventura was. We need a change. And why don't you first attempt helping us out and then go on to the national level? And I spoke to some of the executive members, actually all of them, and they agreed that this would be a great step for me. I put it out on the group, and nobody came back against me for doing it. So I've decided to throw my hat in the ring, never realizing the impact it would make. I'm hoping to make a positive impact. Unfortunately, there has been a fallout, as you're well aware of, and right. We will discuss shortly. However, that's not going to deter me from running.
All right. But you really, I mean, you think you stand a chance of becoming governor of Minnesota as a vampire?
Vampire is my way of life. I am more than just a sang vampire. I am somebody who cares about America. I am a real American.
You're a patriotic vampire.
Correct. That's from my heritage. That's from my father's blood side. Amazingly, not too many people are making a mention about from my mother. My mother was a Hecate witch, that I also follow the ways of Hecate. Apparently, they're just focusing on the vampirism and not on the witchcraft.
Well, I think maybe you have something to do with the fact that you call yourself the Impaler. I mean, that kind of stresses the vampire side, doesn't it?
I would assume so, yes. Yeah, okay. I decided to steal Vlad Tepes's nickname.
Okay, and, well, don't be surprised if the media picks up on the vampire side if you call yourself the Impaler. So, and especially because you're saying you will personally execute criminals. Is that the goal?
I will. I'm pretty sure I can sell the idea to the Minnesota State Legislature about impaling any terrorist who attacks us the way we were attacked on 9/11.
So it's just
nobody
terrorists.
Has come back against me for that.
Okay. And then your other goal, you had three, I believe, positions on the platform that I heard. So it was to impale terrorists.
Correct.
It would be, what was the second part of your platform?
I have a 13-part platform.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, well, then there was a couple others that I heard, only a couple others. But and then you also don't believe in sending troops to fight, which was an interesting. That was the only one, I think, that sounded not vampire-related.
Well, I also am a strong supporter of education.
Okay.
Including homeschooling and bus transportation. And under my administration, even parents who homeschool will get grants so they don't have to pay the enormous cost of books. And I would also give a grant so they would be able to have a computer, because I feel like my children down in Tampa that are going to school, that they have computers in their classroom. Each kid has a computer. So if the children in Florida have a better grade level as far as percentage of passing the state test than Minnesota, then we need to up the equipment that is needed to help the students of Minnesota's public schools get higher grades and be able to have all the materials and education foundation they need to go off for a higher education.
Okay. And speaking of bus driving, it's your significant other that lost
Your pagan wife
lost her job as a bus driver when the story came out about you being a vampire and running for governor.
Correct, because she had admitted that she was a pagan, and as a result, in the letter of her termination letter, second to the last paragraph said that it is our opinion that Ms. Carpenter does not serve as a role model nor is suitable to perform transportation services for the Princeton School District in light of recent media reports of her husband/friend to be a vampire who is running for public office, and Ms. Carpenter informing other bus garage employees that she is a witch. She said she is a pagan, not a witch.
Well, can I ask you, though, a part of it was, did nothing have to do with her admission in the media that you drink her blood? I think that was kind of the deal breaker. I mean, if I just from the outside looking in.
Right. I mean, people are kind of misconstruing that. However, no matter if I've only drank her blood when she's cut her finger, or if I regularly feed on her, considering we are romantically intimate 1 to 2 times a day, there's a greater chance of her catching something from our intimacy if I had anything than if I fed on her. In reality, when you blood feed, like a saying vampire does,
right,
it is not the vampire who would, if they had AIDS, really transferring the virus to the donor. It would be if the donor had AIDS, transferring it,
got it,
to the vampire.
And got it. Time-wise here, Jonathan, I'm sorry. That's all we have time. Do you have a website people can go to?
Yes, www.jonathanforgovernor.us, and it's J-O-N-A-T-H-O-N.
Okay, Jonathan for Governor. And congratulations on the press conference and for the 1 to 2 times a day, too, for that matter. And then Tracy Twyman coming up next on Coast to Coast AM.